Mexico's ambassador to the U.S., Geronimo Gutierrez Fernandez, is convinced that the United States and Mexico can weather this tense period between the two countries over issues like the border wall and rethinking NAFTA.
And I may be, I may appear naive, but I base it on my observations of what has happened over the past, especially 25 years. Also on the fact that when you have a disagreement with a partner and you solve it, it usually turns out to be a much more mature relationship because you know more about each other and you're able, it's in a sense it's like a marriage, right?
Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, Mexico's ambassador gives his thoughts on the state of relations between our two countries, plus a preview of Hinckley Forums to air in the next few weeks. That's coming up. First, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today on the program, we'll be hearing from Mexico's ambassador to the United States, Geronimo Gutierrez Fernandez. Relations between leaders of Mexico and the United States have been frosty lately because of the Trump administration's calls for immigration reforms that would impact potentially millions of Mexican citizens living in the United States, as well as Trump's insistence that Mexico pay for a border wall. Trade disagreements and the new administration's call for the countries to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, is also a pressing issue now. Ambassador Fernandez spoke at the University of Utah last week on Wednesday, May 3rd, and today we're broadcasting his talk in its entirety. He was introduced by Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics.
Thank you all for being here today. It's my great pleasure to introduce an amazingly talented diplomat that I've had a chance to know for many years, it turns out. Yes, where I first got to meet the ambassador when he was here as part of the transition team for President-elect Vicente Fox. And he has just been such a leader. I'm so glad he's here. Let me read just a moment about you. I can't do all of it because he does have a deadline today for this bio. But President Enrique Peña Nieto appointed Geronimo Gutierrez Fernandez as Mexico's ambassador to the United States on January 13 of this year. Prior to his appointment, Ambassador Gutierrez was general manager of the North American Development Bank based in San Antonio, Texas, where he was dedicated to the development of infrastructure and financing on the U.S.-Mexican border. For 15 years, Ambassador Gutierrez served in prominent positions in the areas of commerce, finance, diplomacy, and national security in four federal government administrations. He serves as Deputy Secretary for Governance and National Security, Undersecretary for Latin America, the Caribbean, and North America in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He has held key positions in the federal government, including the Undersecretary of Government in the Ministry of the Interior, in the Ministry of Economy, the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, and the Presidency. Ambassador Gutierrez holds a BA in Economics and Political Science, which I really appreciated, from the Autonomous Technological Institute of Mexico, and a master's degree in Public Administration from the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University, for which he received a Fulbright Garcia Robles Scholarship. A very distinguished speaker for us today, and we are so fortunate to have you here. Please give a hand for Ambassador Gutierrez.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning to all of you. It's really a privilege for me to be here with you today. I am especially grateful to the University of Utah and to the Hinckley Institute for the very kind invitation to join you this morning for this conference. I do want to thank also Mr. Jim Hinckley for being here. It's a pleasure to see you again after many years. Also, I want to thank my very good friend Jason Perry, who now directs the Institute, and with whom I had the privilege of getting acquainted, as he mentioned, almost over 13, 14 years ago, precisely in Salt Lake. I want to recognize also here the presence of Mr. Stuart Dye, an alumni from the university, and the Chair Emeritus of the U.S.-Mexico Chamber of Commerce and a good friend. We've known also each other for some time and actually had the opportunity to come in the same plane from D.C., so it's always good to see you, Stuart. let me also recognize and thank the Mexican General Consulate, in particular Javier Chagoya, the General Consul, who is joining us here and who has done just a wonderful job throughout his tenure here in bringing together closer Mexico and Utah. And it's also important to have here Jose Borjon, who will be the Consul General just in a month from now. When I knew that I was coming here, and we just got 2 months ago, I told him, you know, let's try to make sure that you visit, even though he's formally going to be becoming arriving formally in June the 15th. It's so very good that he can join us today and the rest of the team at the Consul at the General Consul of Mexico. So I've always appreciated the opportunity to talk about U.S.-Mexico relationship, and even more so today, at a time when I think thoughtful and fact-based discussion is especially necessary. I commend the Institute for having these wonderful sessions for students, for faculty, and for inviting us. I think it's a great opportunity, and I really commend you for keeping everything that the Institute does is engaging students and young people into politics, into the policy analysis. It's just a very noble and a very important tasks. And it's always, again, a pleasure to be here. When I was being confirmed by the Mexican Senate, I mentioned that the U.S.-Mexico relationship was at a critical point. And sure enough, as you can imagine, the press got very quickly a hold of that expression. I received a lot of phone calls and several newspaper headlines, U.S.-Mexico relation in crisis, the new ambassador. Oh. And so I was called and said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, no, I did not. Let me be precise. I did not mention that the U.S.-Mexico relationship was at a crisis. What I mentioned was at a critical point. And there's a slight difference, but it's important. If we understand a critical point, a time in which, unless appropriate action is taken, the status quo will be fundamentally different, then I do think we're at a critical point. And I would like to explain why, in my view, is this the case. The 19th century and the first half of the 20th century significantly scarred the U.S.-Mexico relationship at the very beginning. I think it's sufficient to state that during that time there was, during that period, we unfortunately experienced a war and military intervention and other things that deeply scarred the relationship. World War II was in fact an inflection point. Given security considerations at that time and the need for the U.S. To secure both labor and raw materials for the war effort, made Mexico and the United States grow a little bit closer, in fact. Maybe not many people realize, but even at that time, Mexico declared the war on what was then the Axis and fought along the U.S. with an expeditionary force in the Pacific from 1943 to 1945. The remaining of that century, the second half of that century, what happened was best described by Alan Riding, the New York Times correspondent in Mexico for many years. It was a period in which we were just simply, to put it in his word, distant neighbors. We had grown closer, as a result, I think, largely of World War II and what that implied, but we really knew little about each other. We somewhat distrusted each other, and most importantly, interaction between the United States and Mexico was strictly on a necessary basis. We interacted only as it was strictly necessary with one another. And the last decade of the 20th century, to move very quickly through a long period of time. The last decade of the 20th century, which was in many ways a huge game changer worldwide, also implied very important changes for the U.S.-Mexico relationship. And there, I think we find another important inflection point, largely due as a result of three or four factors. The first one is that the end of the Cold War, the first Cold War, if I may say so, implied that Mexico and the U.S. could look at each other through a different lens. The other factor which was very important is the 90s saw a very rapid increase in the population, the Mexican population in the United States, both newly arrived and actually the growth, the very rapid growth of Mexican, of population of Mexican descent, whether, you know, second, third, or gen, or a generation. Also, we decided to take a huge step forward, which was the negotiation an agreement on North American Free Trade, the so-called NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And also, a little bit not necessarily in the same decade, but just a few years later, the terrible and regrettable events of September 11, 2001, here in the United States, which also marked the world in many ways, also deeply affected the U.S.-Mexico economic relationship. But over this period of 25 years, to sum it up, the trend line on the U.S.-Mexico bilateral relationship, in my view, and being completely honest, has been, I think, a very positive one, in spite of differences that we will always have, in spite of challenges that we must always face. If you look carefully, and if one is at that period, I think the trend line has been a very good. And our relationship has evolved positively. During that period of time, say those last 25 to 30 years, I think we learned three very important things as part of that relationship between Mexico and the United States. The first one is that we're better off talking to one another and cooperating as we face shared challenges vis-a-vis pointed fingers at each other, something that we, you know, we had done for a long time. Whether it was addressing an environmental issue on the border, whether it's addressing security concerns, any type of challenge, we found out, I believe so, that we were better off just talking to each other and trying to solve it. The second thing I think that we learned was, and especially as a result of 9/11, was that given the proliferation of non-state security threats, not only to the United States and Mexico, but to several other countries, we learned that no nation can actually protect itself and secure itself in my view, in the present scenario, without the dialogue and cooperation of other nations, including the United States, which continues to be a preeminent nation in terms of military power, economic influence, political influence, but not even the United States can do without talking to other nations, and especially its neighbors, both Mexico and Canada, to secure North America. And finally, the other thing that we learn, which as a whole, these three ideas, in a sense, constitute premises that have helped during the past 25 years, the U.S.-Mexico bilateral relationship, is that we could, due to our geographical proximity and our economic integration and interaction, it made sense to have a free trade agreement, and that that agreement has been largely, in my view, beneficial to both sides and also our Canadian friends up north. Those are the three things that I, you know, I think have been the basis of how the relationship has evolved over the past 25 years. In a sense, what I would summing it up is what we learned was that a strong and successful Mexico is, in my view, in the interest of the United States, as much as a successful and strong United States is in the interest of Mexico. That is, in my view, what characterizes the past 25 years. It is no secret that during the last campaign, presidential campaign here, and as the new administration took office, Mexico has been the subject of different positions, which we certainly do not share. It is no secret that we have made public, the Mexican government, certain differences with the present administration here in the United States. In a sense, we suddenly found ourselves, in my view, in what I would label our very first strong disagreement as partners in the post-NAFTA era, if you like. We had had disagreements before, as I mentioned, throughout, you know, the history of our relationship, very strong ones, very difficult episodes. But nevertheless, this time what made it different, in my view, is that we are having this very strong disagreement, but as partners for the first time. 30 years ago, you would seldom hear a Mexican public official or a Mexican businessman or an American businessman or public official refer to Mexico as a partner. We were, as I mentioned before, distant neighbors or just neighbors. I am convinced that we will weather this period successfully and reaching a place where we have even a better relationship, a relationship that is more mature and that works for both sides. And I may be, I may appear naive, but I base it on my observations of what has happened over the past, especially 25 years. Also on the fact that when you have a disagreement with a partner and you solve it, it usually turns out to be a much more mature relationship because you know more about each other and you're able, it's in a sense it's like a marriage, right? And simply because of the fact that both countries have much at stake in the bilateral relationship. I do have to say that in spite of this difficult period that we're experiencing, I'm a firm believer that we will, again, find common ground in the differences that we're now confronting and that the U.S.-Mexico relationship will continue with a positive trend line. It is useful to think about a relationship like the U.S.-Mexico in terms of, just as an analytical framework, in terms of challenges and opportunities. So let me refer to what I think are presently some of the most important challenges and where do the opportunities lie before my closing remarks and then for a period of questions and answers. The first challenge that we do face, I think, is simply misinformation about each other. Even though we know much more now about each other as countries, as nations, as people, given what we have at stake, I think we still need to do a better job in understanding each other and informing each other. I think sometimes the relationship is viewed through the lens of misconception or misjudgments, and therefore, actually, the work, the efforts, like the one that the Institute is doing today, right now, with me, are extremely important. I had the opportunity of talking just earlier to the president of the university, and I said that I strongly believe that education is an area in which we can continue to find things to do together, because that will always be where young generations form themselves intellectually about any topic, any policy topic, including that of the relationship between Mexico and the United States. The Mexican government and Mexico in general, I think, must do a better job in explaining what Mexico is and what it's not about, being transparent about what the types of challenges that we do have, that we face, our shortcomings, but also talking about, you know, the very positive things that Mexico has as a country. A truly public diplomacy campaign is needed given what we have at stake with the in our relationship with the United States. And I think that's being a bit autocritical. The work that we do through 50 consulates here in the United States and the work of many other government agencies from Mexico and the private sector, it's important, but I think it's not enough to really explain what Mexico is and what it's not about.
Those words coming from Mexico's ambassador to the United States, Geronimo Guterres Fernandez. He spoke last week at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour here on KCPW. We'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, as you know, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we replay them in their entirety as a public service. And today we are airing a talk given last week by Mexican Ambassador Geronimo Guterres Fernandez. He was visiting Utah last week, and he said that relations between Mexico and the U.S. have reached a critical point in the last 25 years, historically, of cooperation between the two countries. And while Fernandez acknowledged that there are strong disagreements between the two countries now, he also highlighted areas where both countries can improve relations and mutual understanding.
Another challenge that I think we face, and is very related to my previous period, is that we must do everything we can, I think, to avoid an anti-Mexican or anti-American sentiment growing in either one of the two countries. It took a long time, I think, to get to where we are. At a place, at a time where I think most Mexicans just basically understand the importance of the United States as a country and as a people, one basically a relation that is fair, respectful, and that works. And I'm convinced that the vast majority of Americans just simply want the same thing. We have good people on both sides that basically want to have a good, you know, partnership with one another. But I am concerned that anti-Mexican sentiment has grown in the United States, and I am also concerned that anti-American sentiment has grown also in Mexico. And I'll give you just a figure. There is a poll conducted by a University of Mexico that measures the attitudes of Mexicans towards the United States. And one of the questions that poll asks is, you know, do you trust the United States as a general concept? And the figure had been, or let me put it the other way, what percentage of Mexicans do not trust the United States? And that percentage had been consistently declining the past 10 years from a level of about 45% to, I think, around 30%. And just recently, it basically doubled in a very short period of time. It's only a poll, it's only a photograph. But I think that there is a concern, a valid one at least, that words matter. And we have to be careful how we talk about each other, because that has a direct impact on our populations. And finally, there's an issue of timing, to be very precise. We are the President Peña Nieto administration, the one that I proudly serve in, is going to be finishing roughly in 18 months. And given the state of things, there are an important challenge in revisiting and upgrading the North American Free Trade Agreement, achieving better security cooperation, and also hoping to tackle some of the important issues as we look at the migration phenomenon between the United States. Our government is ready to engage. We have had very productive contacts over the past months with President Trump administration. I would describe them as good initial contacts that have allowed us to identify better the limits of each side, the objectives, and I think that we, again, I'm being optimistic, but I think that we will be able to find common ground with this new administration. What are the opportunities in the future? And I think that's very important. And I would like to mention three of them related, important to my visit here. The North American Free Trade Agreement is no longer only about trading among ourselves, which in fact we do thoroughly. Every single day, the US and Mexico have a $1.5 billion worth of trade on goods and services going both sides, which is a huge figure if you think about it. But it's more about producing together as a region and exporting to the rest of the world. Over the course of the past 23 years through the North American Free Trade Agreement, what has developed is a series of very important supply chains along North America, including Canada, Mexico, and the United States. To take an example, a car is no longer a Mexican, American, Canadian car. It's really, if you see it objectively, a North American car that gets produced from components of the three countries. And there are certain types of cars that get produced in Mexico, certain in the United States, certain in Canada. And the firms are really, in a sense, North American firms. At a time where competition is important and increasing, North America has become a great platform, a great competitive platform for the three countries. The vast majority of our trade and investment flows among the North American countries, in spite of some difference, go without any single problem, occur every day without any single problem. So the challenge, as we, you know, move to put a label to NAFTA 2.0, is really thinking, and the opportunity, thinking about how can we become more competitive as a region. The concerns that have been expressed here by the new administration about unemployment, especially in the manufacturing sector, about bringing manufacturing back into the United States, are valid and legitimate concerns that every country has. We have our own share also of challenges in that regard. But the point is that the thing that really allows us to be competitive as a region, it allows the United States to be competitive, Mexico to be competitive, and Canada are the supply chains. And that's why we have said, sure, the North American Free Trade Agreement has 23 years. A lot has changed in that time. It's wise to revisit it, review it, and improve it so long as a series of basic principles are maintained. Let's keep trade free, and let's do everything we can to make it fair. Let's keep it trilateral. Let's avoid introducing additional tariff or non-tariff restriction among ourselves. And let's think carefully about what are the things that we can do to improve our competitiveness as a region and bring better positions into the region in a balanced way. That's, from our point of view, what NAFTA 2.0 is really about, and that's a huge opportunity. The second one has to do with energy. I'm going to have the privilege of being later today in a conference about energy put together by the state government. I look forward to that opportunity. But Mexico just recently reformed its energy sector. Undertook a truly historic energy reform. And North America, as probably no other region, has the opportunity of having energy security, understanding energy security as the ability to have access in a sustained and competitive price way to different energy sources. We are exchanging, Mexico is buying natural gas, we export certain type of oil, we import certain gasolines, we exchange electricity across our border as it happens in the United States, and that is extremely important. That's a huge opportunity also in the future. And finally, the other opportunity is actually to have a much better, establish a better way to manage the migration phenomenon between our two countries. The truth is that the vast majority of Mexicans that have come to the United States undocumented have done so because they did not find good opportunities in Mexico. And that's not the responsibility of the United States, that's the responsibility of Mexico. But it's also truth that the United States has the need for certain type of workers here. It's also true that there are, you know, family bonds that have developed literally over centuries. And I don't think that either one of the sides can feel satisfied in the way we're managing the migration phenomenon. The Mexican government does not advocate for any one of its citizens to break the law of any one country. When we defend the rights of Mexicans here, irrespective of their immigration status, what we want and what this implies is we just want to assure that the rights of our nationals here are respected and they have the benefit of the due process that is granted by the legal system here in the United States. And it's also about demographics. Mexico and the U.S. have many complementarities, including their demographics, and that's an opportunity. That opportunity won't be there for forever. And if we can establish a system by which whatever mobility takes place in the future, it's legal, it's safe, and humane, as is often said, it's going to become, that's going to provide a great competitive advantage to both countries. And that's also an opportunity. I'm not naive in the sense that that's a very, politically, this is a very complex issue here in the United States. And Mexico's government just wants to be part of the solution and not of the problem. Those are, I think, our three main opportunities. As we look into the future, again, we are at a challenging time. Frequently, they told me, what did you do? Did you get the short straw to be ambassador, named ambassador to of Mexico at this time in the United States? And I always answer the same. I say, they say, you're very brave. And I'll say, well, I don't know if I'm very brave or a little bit crazy. But I would say that it's always an honor for any Mexican to serve as ambassador in the United States, and even more so today. And especially if you believe, like I do, that the United States and Mexico have a great future together. So it's I regret that it took a long time to visit Salt Lake again. I'm very happy to be back at the university. I thank you all for your presence this morning, for listening to me, and I hope that we can have a fruitful exchange of points of view and questions. Thank you very much.
Mexico's ambassador to the United States, Geronimo Gutierrez Fernandez, spoke last week at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW, and coming up, the ambassador answers a few questions, and we'll be highlighting some of the forums scheduled to air in the coming weeks. We'll be back in a moment. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Last week, Mexico's ambassador to the U.S., Geronimo Gutierrez Fernandez, spoke at the University of Utah, and we're airing his talk in its entirety for you today. Gutierrez was appointed ambassador by Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto in January. Gutierrez was formerly managing director of the North American Development Bank, which was created as part of the North American Free Trade Agreement. He also served in a variety of diplomatic and security positions in the past two decades in Mexico. Before needing to leave after his talk, the ambassador answered a few questions.
Well, thank you for the very insightful speech you've given to us. There's so many things to ask, but I have a few, but we have members of the audience. Maybe we'll go there because we do have a hard stop about 20 to 23 minutes after the hour for a very packed schedule. So Valeria is here with a microphone. Who has a question? Who'd like to start us off?
I couldn't be all that clear. I know.
You were that good. Okay, let me start off with one of those. One of the points I thought was interesting is you talked about how are we neighbors or partners? I'm wondering if this is an or, if this is an and if you start talking about that, maybe you take a second on that, and for the many students we have here on campus, many from Mexico, you talked about how we can be engaged and how we can help in that process as we talk about partnership and friendship.
Sure. There's a saying in diplomacy that geography is destiny, no? And unless something really out of the ordinary happens, we will continue to be neighbors, irrespective of, if something really strange happens. And that doesn't necessarily imply being partners. I think it's a step forward. As I tried to explain, Mexico took a very, I think, a wise and very important decision 25 years ago. It meant that we were going to try to do things together to face common challenges, that we were all going to open ourselves a little bit more to each country, and that it was a recognition also, I think that's a partnership, is that it's not a perfect relationship. No single diplomatic or relationship in the world is perfect. I don't think so. We do have differences, we do have challenges. We don't see eyeball to eyeball on everything. I don't think that would be, an accurate description. But a partnership is, in the end, something that you do voluntarily because you believe that you're going to be better working. And there are so many things, as I mentioned, that we can do better if we work together. Whether it's on the energy front, something that is important for the state of Utah, on trade, facing security challenges. Let me give you an example of what I mean by partnership. Today, at the National Targeting Center in Virginia of the Department of Homeland Security, we have Mexican officials sitting along the side of US officials monitoring every single container that comes into our countries and exchanging in lifetime all of the information. So we know if a container coming into the United States from China or elsewhere, we know what it has, and through algorithms on both sides, we identify any potential risks. And we're constantly, and the same happens. If a container is coming into Mexico, and there is out of Colombia, all the information that comes to our customs authorities is shared immediately with the U.S. The same happens with respect to passengers that are arriving by air or by sea. And that has allowed us to identify common threats. We could not do that if we were not partners. And we would not be better off if we were not working together. And I think that's a good example. On other fronts, in spreading democracy and human rights in the continent, we're also working together. We have worked together at the Organization of American States, because we, along with other 12 countries, including Canada, because we believe that the situation in Venezuela is unsustainable and that something must be done. So we, along other countries, work together to put out a declaration. We are going to be meeting sometime in the next couple of months or convening a meeting along with the United States to work with Central American countries to address on those countries' development and migration and security. That's what a partnership is about. And we were not doing those things 25 years ago, 30 years ago, let alone 50.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very interesting. Another question. We have one right in the back. Please speak right in the microphone. Give us your name.
Hey, my name is Marshall. I just finished working with Senator Hatch's Immigration Department. And we're experiencing many problems, as you probably know, between immigration, specifically between Mexico and America. There's a lot of reform that is being talked about that needs to take place. What is the future of immigration, specifically between our two countries, that you see happening?
Well, I think there are two big components. A bit blunt. One of the components has to do, how do you manage mobility in the future? How do you allow people that are going to be moving between our countries, whether for work or study, to do it in a more agile, safe, legal, secure manner. And although there are already mechanisms for that, there's a series of specific programs and visas that have been established by the United States. I would say that it's fair, a fair statement, that probably that system is not sufficient or modern enough to incentivize people using the legal avenues to come into the United States. And let me give you a specific example. The H-2A visa program, which provides for seasonal workers on the agricultural sector. As I understand, and there is no cap in terms of the people that could apply for those visas. Yet we do have still, and I can speak only for Mexicans, but undocumented nationals here on the agricultural sector. At least the question of why aren't they using a legal system that is available, that would be, you know, fair play, beneficial, is not being used. No. We have, again, complementary population dynamics. There are certain sectors in the U.S. economy that could benefit from people that would come to work from Mexico. So one of the components, how do you manage the flow? And the other components is what do you do with the people that are already here, that are undocumented, of Mexican, you know, Mexican is estimated, there's probably 11 million Mexicans out of roughly half are estimated to be undocumented here. Mind you, the numbers have radically been decreasing over the past years. The net immigration from Mexico, not according to the Mexican government, according to U.S. institutions, is in fact a net zero or declining nowadays. So the other big company is how do you address that? And that is, for the Mexican government, it's difficult to get involved because it's an issue of sovereignty for the United States, and that is understood. The United States has all the right to decide how it's going to solve that problem, who comes in, and through what mechanisms. But I think it's also fair to say that an important number of people in the United States do believe, and if you look at some of the polls, again, not our numbers, most of the people find that finding a reasonable pathway for them to become first, not be undocumented, eventually residents, and the decision to become a citizen is an individual decision, is necessary. The idea of deporting someone that has been living probably for 12 or 15 years, that has a dog, a house, a mortgage, a car, and two kids, who are US citizen, deserves a little bit of reflection. And again, it's not a matter, at least not for the Mexican government, of not understanding that the laws of the United States should be respected and that we do not advocate for people to come into at least our nationals undocumented. But the fact is that we have not done a very good job in managing that phenomenon worldwide and in the context of the US-Mexico relationship. I think those are the two components. Whether there's going to be immigration, comprehensive immigration reform anytime soon, I defer to the experts here. Do I hope that there's another attempt to do so? I think, or at least it's such a big issue that at least in my view, components need to be addressed by pieces. Those would be my comments.
We're out of time. I'm sorry to say, Mr. Ambassador, I will say we are so grateful for you spending some time with us. And whether or not it was the best time for you to be the ambassador here, we're grateful that you are.
It's my privilege, and it's my privilege to be here. And I thank you for coming.
Please give a hand for Mr. Ambassador. Thank you.
Full audio from the Mexican ambassador's talk last week can be found on our website, kcpw.org. And now for a preview of some upcoming talks and forums that you can look forward to hearing here on KCPW on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. Next week, we'll be airing a campus community dialogue organized by the College of Social and Behavioral Science titled The Economy and the Environment. How should we think about the relationship between the economy and the environment? What are the best ways to balance economic growth with environmental protections, both domestically and globally? Panelists in this discussion will include Val Hill, the Executive Director of the Utah Governor's Office of Economic Development, Professor Brenda Bowen with the Global Change and Sustainability Center, Lane Beatty, the President and CEO of the Salt Lake Chamber, and Alan Matheson, the Executive Director of the Utah Department of Environmental Quality, plus the moderator is Natalie Gochner, the Associate Dean of the School of Business at the University of Utah. Following that event, we'll be airing a forum titled, How Do You Start a New City? The Opportunities and Challenges of Utah's Newest City, Mill Creek. It'll be a conversation about launching the new city on Salt Lake County's east side. And the conversation will include Mayor Jeff Silvestrini of Mill Creek City, also Bev Weepy, a council member with the new Mill Creek City. And the conversation will be moderated by Professor Tim Chambliss, the Academic Outreach Coordinator and Associate Professor and Lecturer with the Department of Political Science. And following that forum, we'll be airing a talk titled Sharia in Everyday Life, Marriage Iranian Style in Norway by Dr. Marion Boe, a Fulbright scholar at Northeastern University and a postdoctoral fellow in religion and theology at the University of Bergen, Norway.
So in this presentation, I will introduce you to the ways that the Muslim Dawah is practiced and perceived by individuals of Iranian background residing in Norway. And although the empirical data is related to this specific case, I argue that the findings are also relevant for understanding the broader trends of everyday Sharia in Western pluralistic societies, how it is connected to everyday life, contextualized and internationally linked.
She'll be speaking about her postdoctoral research project examining religious and legal developments related to marriage practices among individuals of Iranian background residing in Norway. And finally, another upcoming forum to look forward to is the Future of U.S.-Russian Relations, Thinking Beyond Trump and Putin. It'll include Russian journalist Sergei Parkamenko, who is also a publisher and a founder of several projects aimed at developing civic activism and promoting liberal values in Russia. The Future of U.S.-Russian Relations will also include Stacy Clausen, a global fellow at the Kenyon Institute and a former assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. All of those forums you can look forward to hearing in the next couple weeks on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.